This is for the nerds, this is for the brainiacs, this is what we deserve. Go ahead and play it back, you ain't gonna touch me. You're not gonna do nothing, you are not above me. I bet you wish you was me, I know it, I know.
What is poppin', everybody? And welcome back to another special episode of the Only Friends Podcast. Well, you know, it's me and my only friends, which includes, but is not limited to, my sidekick, Berkey. What's poppin', baby? How you feeling today?
The sidekick bit gotta die.
Well, it's not a bit. That's
you
the
want
problem.
Every bit to die.
Well, no, the problem is it's not a bit.
Every Conrad bit he wants to die.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's his old problem.
You're not allowed to have any creativity.
He's just gotta live with this type of shit, you know? Just rough life out
what
here.
What do you
man.
Mean? I've let him do the intro for 500 fucking episodes.
You hate every single one of them.
The intros are fine.
Well, I'm actually changing the intro.
Go ahead.
It's getting changed next week.
Okay.
I haven't figured it out yet, but next Monday, we're going to have a new intro.
It's the only thing you do well.
Well, I'm going to figure out a new one.
All right.
I got to switch it up a little bit. I'm not sure what it's going to be. Might be skiddy-diddy-diddy-diddy, but what's popping? Or something like that, you know?
It's always going to end with what's popping.
Who knows what it's going to be? We're going to figure that out. I'm trying to vamp a little bit here because Guapo gave me that thing, but it's kind of hard because I don't really know how to fucking talk. So it's like, whoa,
right,
keep going.
It's like you're the quote-unquote host of
a
podcast.
Yo, relax, sidekick. You're going to stop with this. Come on.
Okay.
Jesus.
We have a very special show for you guys today. We're joined by two legends of the game. OGs, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Long-timers. They've been around forever. Now they are the dynamic duo that represents Table One and the Table One podcast. The one and only Justin Young and Art Parman. Welcome, boys.
Yeah, thanks for having us, guys.
Hold on, I'm taking some notes here on the sulfur end. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, I got it the wrong one. Sorry.
Okay.
Oh, there we are.
Look at that.
Yeah, look at that.
Look, 1.58K subscribers. Wow. I didn't even know they did that.
Is that a good number? I'm not even sure. I think it's great, by the way. And, sorry, guys. I got so excited to be on here. I got a little bit of an erection. And as you can guys tell, I lean a little bit to the left. So.
I see a little butt cheek, though. That's getting through.
I mean, truthfully, it's like we just moved LaManna and put in a bearded version of LaManna.
Beard manna? Tortoise with a half shell?
Should I grow my beard out like that?
I think you should try.
Yeah.
Have you been trying for a while? It looks good.
No, it's about, I don't know, a week or so.
It's about as long as it gets?
No, it'll grow. I get to a point where it gets too itchy and then I don't let it go.
Well, you have to get past that point.
I know, I never do.
I don't know how you guys do it.
Then it's summer, it's hot, and you know.
I can't grow this beard.
Well, you can't. You're like a hairless cat. Like, I mean.
it's somewhat true. I get like, I don't even get like LaManna's level of scruff. Like that's like a 5 o'clock shadow. He just shaved this morning. You know, mine takes a month and a half, and it just gets all scraggly.
Mm-hmm. LaManna, you have a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And does she like it?
She likes. I think it was that long. Listen, I've had like it shaved or like short like this, but never like clean shaved. Like literally, it was probably 6 years we were together. She had never seen me clean shaved, and then during the pandemic, I'm like, well, just gonna
expose her.
Yeah, because I was like, I literally haven't clean shaven in forever, and I took it, and she was terrified. Because it was like someone she hadn't seen forever. You know, she's like sleeping next to me. She's like, I woke up. I was like, oh my God, who's that?
I have to warn my wife a week in advance.
Right.
And like just kind of like prepare for it. Like remind her every day leading up.
I've seen you clean shit. And it's shocking.
It's unsettling.
Different. It's very disturbing. It's quite disturbing.
You may know him as Justin Young, but when he's clean shaven, he's Robert 07.
Yeah.
I was Trevor.
In his online avatar.
Yeah.
Man. Trevor. It's good to have you, boys. Let me get a little bit of house cleaning out of the way before we get this pod off and popping. First, I'm headed to Milwaukee, so you guys can find me there. We have a meetup game on Thursday at noon with Jamin Burton and Jamie Kerstetter. It's going to go from noon to 5. We're going to be playing all of the tables. Expectation right now is about 10 tables, so be sure to get on the list if you plan on coming. Friday, the sports book is going to be opening up. I believe that's going to be in the morning. We'll be there for the grand opening of that as well. Also, what else I got? I got the On Second Thought plug. Is that what we got?
That is correct.
Yeah, don't forget we have a new episode of On Second Thought out this week. We have a little bit of a teaser for that episode. In today's episode, the hand between Jeremiah and Josh will be 350 big blinds effective with an SPR of 30. Both Jeremiah and Josh have a pretty deep background in online poker and thus are going to be incredibly studied at 100 big blinds. And they got a few things pretty wrong. These guys have put thousands of hours in on the felt, and they still miss some general principles simply because depth changed. So when Jeremiah says, "I think Jack should check back and trap some of the time," and Josh believes, "I think he's trapping with Jack some of the time," it skews all of their river decisions to the point where he almost called with a hand that's a pure fold. All right, a new episode out every Monday until the next season of Poker Out Loud, season 11, which should be premiering sometime late May, early June, I think. And then lastly, we have two academies coming up at the end of May. If you guys haven't signed up already, time is ticking. The Cash Academy is almost sold out. That's going to be May 23rd to the 25th. And the MTT Academy is May 27th to the 30th. That's going to be led by Matt Hunt. It's a four-dayer getting you ready for the WSOP and all things for this summer. I think Conrad has something he needs to plug, too.
May 14th, I will be in Montreal at the Playground Casino.
Hire him now.
What are you doing there?
We'll be out there for a WPT meetup game. Come on down. Have some fun. We'll get it popping.
Are you going to be dealing?
Yo, relax.
What do you guys get for these meetup games?
Notoriety, slap on the ass.
So where did popping come from? Like, is this super popular, or is it like a? I know I'm old, so like just tell me like that I'm old. Is popping like the new thing now, or like is it trying to be in the new thing?
Well, I probably stole it from
popcorn.
No, like Joel Santana in like early 2000s.
So no, it's not new.
Not new at all.
It's only a Conrad thing.
Yeah. I brought it back.
You said it too. I'm just saying.
Well, I just echo Conrad.
Okay.
I'm here to play the bit. Okay.
I'm not gonna lie. Like his setup looks like he's the host and you're a sidekick.
That's what he tries to make this thing be.
Right. So it's working.
It's working.
He gets exactly 90 seconds of airtime every show as the host, and we let him live in his little bubble there, pretending that he's running the show.
That's fair.
And then every now and again, when we're having a serious conversation, he'll just out of the blue butt in. He goes, "CSA, it's a Conrad service announcement." We're like, what happened? He's like, "I have a belly button."
Listen, this is going, that's all part of getting going well.
Do you guys want to see
it? Just pops up out of nowhere. Wait, there's a conversation going on. I need to insert myself.
Do you guys want to see my belly button?
No. Go on. Okay.
I would take a look.
I don't want to say no right away.
While we're on the topic of podcasts, you guys made the let's say ambitious decision to start one. How has that been working out so far?
Dude, it's been really fun. We've had a lot of interesting people on, including Mr. Matt Berkey.
If you guys haven't
seen it, YouTube Table One Vegas, and you can watch Matt Berkey deny a shot from me. but he will expose his entire roots, his origin story on the Table One pod. Oh, there's Chance. Look at all his trophies.
Chance
and honestly, you could zoom out and there's a lot more trophies there. And
he actually got another one about, he was talking about the first event back he was going to play.
The heads
he was like,
up.
Oh, yeah, the heads up, you know, whatever, 10K heads up. Just wins it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's like, "I'm going down there early so I can play the 10K heads up," and then he fucking shipped it.
Just work on my reads.
Anyways, if anyone wants to ship a tournament, just come on the pod. And we got you.
What do you do if you're a cash game player? You should just have like your P&L behind you or something, because you can't have a chart. They don't give trophies for cash games.
You can't do that.
Not only do you know.
Honestly, if mine was up there, more people would come and play.
That is very sad but true.
I was gonna say, like, you don't put your P&L up, you put like, you know, Justin's P&L
there
up.
There you go, yeah.
It's just, it can show some happiness on the back end too. It's like, well, yeah, he lost this much money, but he was pretty happy most of the day. He was having a lot of fun. I only stormed off once.
Every peak, we put a little picture of Justin like taking a shot or doing some mushrooms or something, just like on one of these peaks. He's like, oh, look up, yeah.
How many episodes are you guys in on this pod?
I think we're 25-ish. We have, actually this weekend, we have OG of the online poker streets, Lee motherfucking Jones.
Wow. From Poker Stars.
I was going to ask. It's like
probably in the chat right now. Shout out to Lee Jones. Exactly.
He's in there arranging a chop on the next Sunday Million. Like Chip Leader is about to ICM suicide the next guy. No. Justin didn't know who Lee Jones was. When I was like, listen, Lee Jones actually DM'd me. We were doing our videos and I get a DM and it's Lee Jones and I'm like, okay, Lee Jones, whatever. I don't know. Let me read this. And it's just like, hey man, just realize like these stories need to be aired. I'm probably one of the last people alive that's won a pot off of Jack Treehouse Strauss or whatever old reference is in there. And he was like, I want to come on. And we did it, and it was great.
It was amazing. Honestly, like, I was just enthralled.
Yeah, Justin was blown away. He's, like, employee, like, I don't know, sub 50 at Poker Stars, and he told all these great stories about the CEO of Poker Stars. And anyways, yeah, if you guys are interested in the lore of online poker, you will like that episode. It's coming out this Saturday.
I know you guys are avid watchers of our show, so you would know this already, but to remind everybody at home, we've also had Lee Jones on the show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, son of a bitch.
All right, so you're going to see some repeats there on the old stories.
No, you guys got mostly the old stories. Yeah,
he's got plenty of stories. Right, believe me. He's got some fresh ones, I'm sure.
Are you growing tired of it yet?
Of the pod?
Yeah.
No, I mean, we did like, I don't know, it's kind of interesting doing them. You guys do a live show, but we actually Justin had to go out of town for like almost 3 weeks, and we did like three or four in a week and a half, and we just like stacked them up. We had the man. No, we had a bunch, like kind of knock them out right in a row, and today we did one and I forgot how to set up the microphones. It took me a minute to like remember how the setup process goes, because we don't have guys like you guys have. You guys have guys.
You need yourself a guapo. You're setting up Matt for a beautiful dig right now.
Not touching a guapo. You're fantastic.
So you guys been drinking since what time?
You know we don't keep track.
Me personally? I mean, we've been drinking since probably around 10 a.m. Okay. I've been drinking since about 8:45.
Okay, cool.
We'd like to give a shout out to our new sponsor, Hazy IPA. And
it's all about the monkey, guys. Come on. Get a more victory.
None of the hard stuff today. I'm impressed.
Yeah, well, you know. What else are you going to do today?
We're at Berkey's house. There's no hard stuff here. We had to bring our own beers.
Yeah, we might be having fun. We do have
this came from my house.
We do have some hard stuff.
Cheers, guys.
Censored.
Conrad, hey, I'll join you.
Conrad takes any opportunity he can to take a shot on
chug,
air.
Chug, it's, chug, chug.
Oh,
don't
my
stop.
Gosh. That's a full one, too.
It's a very, very weird flex.
What do you mean? I was just drinking with them.
No,
you know?
I get it.
I don't understand.
You're right. All right. Moving off of the pod a little bit, let's talk origin stories a little bit, because I think that I'm just making the assumption everybody here knows you. I mean, you guys are world famous. Justin Young, Art Parman. I mean, everybody should know. But in case they don't, I've actually known Art the longest. We were a part of a poker forum back in like 2004.
Donkeyfish. Shout out to Donkeyfish Poker.
Donkeyfish Poker, baby. Donkeyfish Poker. It was me, Art.
Great name.
Alex Keating and
the guy that trolls you all the time.
Ryland.
Yes.
Yeah. The non-successful Keating. No, he's great. I love Alex. He's got the beard, you know.
Yeah.
He's great.
Yeah, the bearded goalie.
He
was insufferable back then, for what it's worth. He was like 18.
I haven't seen him in a while, but
no, he's fine now. I have a story about him. He fucked me near the bubble on the main event. He talked our entire table into stalling when I had like top 10 stack. Damn. It was fucking brutal. But that was years ago. He's apologized. I accept. We've moved on. But he and Ryland were fucking insufferable in that fucking forum back in the day. They were brutal.
I think I still have a t-shirt in my in my closet. It says "Degenerate Gambler" across the front, like DFP or Donkey Fish Poker on the side. Is it still active?
No, God, no. It hasn't been active.
Well, not active. Like,
I don't think you can. No, there's no website.
The website's not there.
I think they killed. I'm still in touch with Noah. We make like Bengals Steeler bets every year and stuff like that. And I think he was the admin or whatever, but I'm pretty sure they killed it in like the late 2010s, like right around Black Friday.
Yeah.
Maybe slightly before, but I had a ton of swag. I don't know what I did with it.
I was going to say, have
like a dozen t-shirts.
You have to still have it.
No.
You haven't got rid of your fucking high school workout shirt.
Those mean something to me, Conrad. Those mean something to me, you know? Okay. 1994 Leechburg All-Star team. That wasn't an easy fucking roster to make, okay?
Oh, wow, you tell just rubbing it in fucking LaMatta's face here. LaMatta was stiff from that All-Star team.
Not everybody just automatically got put on the team, all right?
Listen. It's all politics, okay, over there.
So wait, competing positions as well? Or
No. Okay. I was outfield. He was fast.
I was slow.
Yeah.
We were both left-handed.
Yeah. Oh, the turtle was fast?
Turtle used to be fast. Yeah. Imagine that.
He was on PEDs.
Yeah, he was on PEDs. Like, seriously, legit. Damn. He was on PEDs.
Early adopter?
Early adopter in the PEDs?
When I was eight.
He was on PEDs. I was on Little Debbie's. It was really tough to compete. But,
The tables have turned.
I could drop fucking bombs, though. Oh, man. So yeah, that was my early introduction to art. Justin, I think I became friends with you probably more so whenever I got out here through Brent with Baldy and everybody else. I knew you both, which is kind of ironic. I knew you both as MTT players. Justin is a very successful live player, and Art as a guy.
He's definitely a guy.
I won the first two live tournaments I played in Las Vegas. Thank you very much.
Okay.
The very first two ruined my life.
I don't remember your MTT pedigree being super, super endearing.
It's not great. The highlight reel is 41st, the year that McKeon won the main event.
Okay.
And those first two where I... where I won like
You played a ton online though, no?
I did play a lot online.
The Woozle.
I was the Woozle. Whatever on the fuck Poker that Stars. Means. It was from the honestly I don't know what it's from. One of my it was like I think it was Winnie the Pooh related, actually, if I recall. The Woozle is like the scary thing in the
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, wow,
something about Thuzzles and Woozles.
As someone that backed Art for about probably 8 years, I never asked. I backed him online.
8 years? Live or
six
whatever.
Figures.
That's pretty good, actually. All things considered.
I'm making him play 600 win events now, too. That's good.
I'm recovering old makeup down here.
Oh, my God.
Look how sexy he is.
Let's go.
Oh, it says Berkey is beautiful right on his shirt.
Wow. Yeah. That was five diamond, I'm guessing.
Yeah. It was the five diamond.
Who has all those chips next to you? Why is she interviewing you? She should be in your seat, and whoever's there should be talking to her.
I was an up-and-comer.
Not a speck of gray.
I think I know. I think I know exactly what one that is. Was that 2011 when Antonio either won it or got second?
I think so, yeah.
I know, because I bubbled that tournament in a chip lead pot where I six bet kings, and one of the recreationals that made the final table, I can't remember what his name was now, but I remembered it very well then. Might have been like Hussan or something like that. He just like gets it all in, back jamming ace queen, and I would never had a chance. Just stone bubbled me in like a 300 big blind pot.
I always say if you win your all ins with kings medium deep in a tournament, you get to make money. Otherwise, you're just out.
And it's advice like that, ladies and gentlemen, that has fueled his MTT career.
So speaking of which, we were watching Brent Hanks' final table at Champions.
Yeah, he torched it.
He texted me right afterwards. I was like, congrats. He's like, I feel like I torched it. I was like, yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think I would have done the same thing. So 100% you torched it.
Yeah. He's definitely not texting you for advice. It's more so just to commiserate.
Yeah, for sure. I don't even know where I was going with it. But
you were watching the final table.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, that was he was just. I would have done the same thing.
Since 8:45, you say.
I swear I was going to go somewhere with that, but you know, it'll come back to me, and I'm just going to interrupt somebody in the middle of the sentence.
Oh, I do that all the time.
It's fine. It's fine because you'll actually be telling us the story as opposed to Conrad interrupting us. Be like, hey. Did you see
my belly button?
Are we all circumcised or is it just me?
What do you do?
Wait, hold on, Justin. Take the censored bar off. We want to see what's going on down there.
The other day, we were talking about something, and out of the blue, he just goes, out of the blue, Conrad just goes, Ren Len, Lady Gaga. And we're like, excuse me? What? He goes, Lady Gaga.
I'm touchdown, like, Tom Brady.
Okay, what about Lady Gaga? He goes, Ren Len. I'm like, I don't know these words.
Oh, no, because like every time he gets Queens, he just yells like Gaga.
Yeah, if I played tournaments, I would know that. But I don't play tournaments.
Well, you should.
Yeah. Imagine the poor people at home who are watching this. They have no fucking clue.
They watch tournaments.
Now they know.
Everybody knows Lady Gaga.
Well, now they know.
Hey, Justin, kudos on this faux hawk, because that's pretty strong, man.
Dude, look how sexy you are.
Man, you
Jesus,
are,
you kind of look like Stapleton right
Is
here.
Is that Boesky interviewing you?
Is it really?
No.
It looks just like him. Where's his hash house of go-go? Really like, holy crap.
So, funny story about the haircut. So, my wife convinced me to do it. I actually like the haircut, because like,
yeah, it looked great.
I was reasonable looking back then, and I went home to visit my mom over Thanksgiving, and she just looks at me. She goes, "Oh, do you actually like your haircut?" And I was just like, "Yeah, no, it's in the fad." I was like, "You don't like it?" She's like, "I didn't say that at all. I didn't. I just said that was interesting. That's all I said. Like, it's a haircut. I guess it's fine."
You look like the king of all the shit rags.
Honestly, like,
that's an affliction shirt. I'm sure of it.
No, that shirt I made for when Eric Baldwin won the card player of the year.
Oh, I remember this.
And it was like, with a great mustache comes great responsibility, because like he used to rock the mustache.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
And I just had like Hulk Hogan on there and Tom Selleck and all this stuff. I made like 4 different t-shirts for like this huge party I threw for him, and like, yeah, it was a fucking
honestly,
yeah, that's
just
incredible. So,
just zooming in on you there, you look like, if you didn't hear what you were saying, I would just think like, oh man, Euro crusher.
Yeah. for sure. He's like from Hungary or something, you know? Yeah.
Oh, I check the charts, and sometimes Queen 10 off, new spots, just a 3-bet, but
you got it nailed it. For those who aren't privy, because this is way back in the day, the card player of the year was what was previous to Hendon Mob, basically.
Yeah.
So card player, I don't remember how they did their scoring. It was whatever, I guess.
They made it up every year, honestly.
Yeah, probably. But I do remember it coming down to the wire between Baldy and I can't remember a bunch of other legends of the game back
exactly.
in the day.
You yes. can't remember second place.
Yep, nobody ever remembers second
place. Very fair point. Somehow it was like Justin. So what point did you guys actually get your minds right and transition into cash?
Good question.
For me personally, like, I was cash first and kind of backdoored into tournaments. Like, I was online cash guy. Like, I the Poker Stars, 25 cent, 50 cent. That was my fucking jam.
He's saying that not jokingly. Yeah. Don't laugh. Yeah.
It was.
What's up,
sorry,
bitch?
Sorry. It was popping. It was popping for me. It was. Trying to pronounce a G harder.
Yes.
It was popping.
Harder on G. G. Yes. There's yes. no G.
Go so hard sorry. On the G that people know how old you are.
But basically, like the last couple of years of college, and then like I was an engineer for a bit, I would wake up and play like 2 or 3 hours of 25 cent, 50 cent. And then like as soon as I got off work, I would just come home and I would just play, go to the gym, come back, cook dinner, and then just play till I couldn't, like...
Now, you're leaving some details out. If I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure the story goes that you were an engineer for NASA, is that correct? Or the government?
Seems made up, but no,
the government in some capacity?
Department of Defense.
Okay. Yeah. And you were fired because you were playing on the job.
No. I did some things that would have been frowned upon, but I was never fired.
Oh, okay, okay.
No, I quit. They said they would happily have me back after I failed at poker. And to both our surprises, I'm still here.
Right.
Yeah.
But that number is creeping up the speed now. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. No,
like about like 2 years into my job, I basically told my boss, I'm looking to quit to play poker. I just want to figure some stuff out. I just want to give you a heads up. And he's like, okay. Like, good luck.
He goes, you know, we have benefits here.
Yeah. I was making good money. Got like, oh man, I'm such an idiot. Or I am such an idiot, I guess.
Would you have changed, like, knowing what you know now, if you could go back and just follow that career path?
The answer's no.
No,
of course not. He's been drinking since 8:45 this morning. What the fuck do you mean?
Yeah, right.
Something, of course something no. money can't buy, yeah. You know?
How do you know he didn't do that when he was working for the DOD?
He was drunk at work at the DOD.
Come on, I already got him fired when it didn't actually happen. Yeah. Have him drinking on the job, too.
I was a very reasonable human then. I was a good employee. But
no,
like,
faux hawks.
Buddy, you told me.
I did have a tongue ring back then.
You told me you would play late online poker, and then you would go to your job, and then you would drive your car up to the old lake.
There was a pond, yeah.
Like the makeout section, but it's daytime, yeah. And you would take a nap there you felt like you could go back and work. He was not a good employee.
Yeah. Oh, okay, no, I wasn't. I got my work done. I'll put it that way.
Oh, you got your work done. Okay.
But the thing was, like, especially working for the government, like, they give you like this very little bit of work, but it takes everyone, yeah, like all this time, and so make sure everyone gets their piece of the pie to like count their hours. So like something would take me like half an hour, it would take a day and a half, and it was such a waste of money, and it was such bullshit.
And to be fair, like, you know, you snoozing at a desk job, like, whatever,
dude, everyone did it. It was hilarious. People was like, don't wake him, come on, like, just let him sleep, it's fine.
When I was in college, Brian and I used to play in this game at Polish Hill in Pittsburgh. And it was our first like real experience of live poker. It was like 25-cent, 50-cent, but it felt big. And we would play all hours of the night. And I worked for my uncle during the summer running heavy machinery in the woods, like on gas lines. Like, we're cutting down trees, we're like moving lumber, like all types of shit that's really fucking dangerous.
Should have a full night's sleep.
Should at least have some sleep. Many, many a times I would go on no sleep, and I'll never forget this one time. I drove straight from Polish Hill in Pittsburgh, which was a solid hour away from the work site, and I'm driving there, and there's this intersection by my grandparents' house that's a four-way light. It's like 6:30 in the morning. I haven't slept in 30 hours going to my job, and the light is a stale red. A stale red. I never even realized there's a light there. And this is like rush hour traffic. You know, it's like 6:30 in the morning on a Monday, rush hour for a small town. But I'm about to blow through this light when it dawns on me, like, I'm at an intersection, and I just cut a hard right into the berm while a flow of traffic is just streaming through the intersection.
No sympathy at all.
I just shook my head once. I was like, it's going to be a long day at work today, boys.
And it's going to take an extra 5 minutes to get there because it's fucking hard right. Yeah,
they might not want me on the chainsaw today. I don't know.
You should have had a government job. You'd have been fine.
Oh. That's right. I've just been twisting the sign the whole fucking day.
Roll, go, stop. I don't know.
What a mistake. Youth is wasted on the ignorant. Am I right? What I would do differently now, I mean, same thing.
The thing is, you wouldn't have near as much fun, though. Like, there's a counterbalance to like being ignorant, like during your youth. Like,
if you had stuck with that career path, not that this is important, but I kind of want to paint a picture. If you had stuck with that career path, like with the way that you would advance through a government job, do you think that you would be as wealthy?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Oh yeah. Based on the last 5 years, fucking yeah.
I still like maintain a very tight friendship with like two of the guys that basically I got hired the same time,
yeah,
and we had similar jobs. Like, they took different career paths here and there, but
now
they,
he's asking them, hey, do you want to come play?
They're doing quite well. Like, they're happy, and like their jobs are, I would say, less stressful than mine.
Like, yeah, I only ask that because, like, to me, I feel like that's the exchange, is that you give up the security and potential like pretty high returns as far as like finances go in order to just recoup so much time. Like, we've had just so much free time in the last 20 years that even if you're working a cushy government job where, you know, you're putting in an hour of work for an 8 hour day, you're still spending 8 hours a day there.
Right. You would eventually rotate into Lockheed Martin and be like,
well, I mean, like Boeing, I probably would have been fired by now, but yeah, like, but no, like, I mean, that is a trade off because like I've been on more vacations than them. I've experienced more, I wouldn't say life experiences, because they have kids and they're very happy and successful, but like I was able to see more
that's
of the world.
That's what they tell you.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I tell myself.
The other thing is you're living on like the barbell existence, right? Like there's a version of all of us that is like fucking Fedor Holtz, won 8 tournaments in a row, like won everything. But like I've been spending the last fucking 20 years trying to get rich quick. You know what I mean? Like one of these days.
Like, may I introduce you? May I introduce you to my friend Airball?
I know Airball quite well. He has contributed to getting rich, like lately. But overall, like.
Not having as fast as you would like.
Yeah, exactly.
You got Berkey rich quick.
Yeah, he did. But it all right into Bitcoin. 15K.
Whoop! Woo!
Nice year-long investment. All right, so you were always playing cash, even in the 25-cent, 50-cent streets. When did you start playing like higher stakes?
Probably around... So the first visit I had out to Vegas, and I've been to Atlantic City a couple times, and I even think I went to Tunica a few times. But like first time I came out to Vegas, I came with my dad, my brother, and a couple friends, and we were staying, I can't remember, like some shit place. And I went down to play Mandalay Bay. They were playing like probably 4-8 limit, I think, like something like that. And I would play there, and then I graduated to where it was like 2-5 no limit, and I won like $600 in a day, and I was fucking pumped. And then I knew Bellagio was playing or had like $1,000 daily or nightly tournament, and like everyone was happy at Mandalay Bay, and I was like, I'm gonna go. So I get out, and I was like, I'm gonna walk. This is fucking May or June or something like that. I'm gonna go walk to Bellagio.
I did the same thing my first trip to Vegas.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, there's Bellagio. I can see it. It's literally right there. I'll be there in 15 minutes. No big deal. Like 45 minutes later, I'm just drenching wet and just like, okay, well, I want to play this $1,000 nightly tournament because like I just want to play my first tournament. This is going to be great. And I get in there, like I barely make like end of registration, just soaking wet. I'm like, that's it. I don't care. I'm going to get in there. And I get in there with probably like 15 blinds or 20 blinds or whatever. And like I end up chopping, winning the tournament or whatever. And when I say whatever, I had no idea what I was doing. Like the biggest spot I won where like I misclicked a raise, they called the floor as they should. And they're like, oh, your raise stands. And the guy jammed on me. And I was like, I called with a very weak hand. I was like, ah, fuck you. I call. Like,
some things haven't changed.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It was more out of anger and frustration than I called or anything. I was just like, ah, you're being an asshole, I think. Like, he wasn't. But I was
right.
Like, and like, I gave me all the chips to like where I could like chop the tournament. And after that, I was like, oh, tournaments are. Somehow tournaments are just fun. Like I can just sit down and win $45,000 in like 5 hours.
And to be fair, fantastic. His first tournament, you can see this on numerous episodes of ours, but he tells the story where he had a 2-1 chip lead and Jack McClellan.
OG. Awesome OG guy.
Comes up to him. And is like, do you guys want to chop heads up? Like, you know, and Justin is like,
I was like, what is a chop? And they were just like, oh, that's when you guys can like kind of split the prize money. I was like, oh, so like, cause like back then it was like first place was like 50,000 and second place was like 28,000.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, I don't want to get second place. Can like, we can just split the middle. And they're like, yeah, you can just do that. I'm like, okay, let's do that. And the guy was like, okay, well you have a chip lead. Like what kind of deal do you want? I was like, 50-50 seems pretty fair to me.
A NASA engineer, ladies and gentlemen.
The guy just looked at me kind of blank. He was like, you really? I was like, yeah, let's do it. He's like, he immediately shook my hand. He was like, tell you what, I'll let you get first place in the title or whatever.
Very nice of you.
Taxes-wise.
I didn't even think about the trophy or whatever was attached. I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, bonus. This guy's so nice. That's nice. And Jack gave me like a bunch of like coupons to go to like the buffet at the lounge or whatever. And I couldn't be happier. Like I didn't know till like almost a year later that I made a very bad mistake.
So how the fuck did you end up playing cash?
Because he made a very bad mistake.
He's like, I know.
I'm out of here. Fuck this shit. You guys want to do math and shit? I'm going to play cash. I cry.
So, well, at some point, the tournament run dries out. And, you, like, I don't know. Like, my entire poker career is just going back and forth of, like, which thing I hate.
Hold on. The short answer is they didn't used to have re-entry.
Right. Right.
He would have to have something to do when he was out.
Yeah, that's relatable.
Yeah, I basically liked tournaments from like 2004 to 2006 maybe, and got no success. And I went back to cash and did very well until like, then I was like, oh, tournaments, I'll try them again. And same thing, like whatever. On 2008-09, just went on a fucking heater for like 3 years. And like then all of a sudden, tournaments were the fucking answer until I went on a downswing between like 2012 to 2015. Whatever.
You won a WPT there shortly after.
Yeah, no, like, well, exactly. I mean,
I was there for that one.
I was, you were my inspiration. Like, no, like, we.
It's like, I don't want to be you, man. I'm going to go win this thing.
But no, like, Berkey, me, you, Brent, Baseball.
Baldy, yeah.
I was there.
Yeah, like you say, LaManna was there. Like, we all got an Airbnb. Wasn't Clark there? Zach Clark, wasn't he there too?
I don't think so.
Okay. Maybe that one. But either way. Like, yeah, we were all down in Florida, and, like, it was fun. I think Berkey drove me just about every single day, like, back and forth or whatever. And we had some nice talks, like, there. And, like whatever. I got Luxac. Like,
yeah, the King 5 suited.
King 4, motherfucker.
Sorry.
King 4 for life.
King 4 hand? Run it out for the viewers at home.
All right, so this is probably, like, 20 people left, maybe less. And,
in the tournament that you won?
Yeah, in the tournament I won. And this is when, like, I thought I could read people's souls, and, like, I was very sharp and... That was an asshole. Yeah, whatever.
Chance Cornuth.
And Phil Hui like raised under the gun. And like he was playing pretty snug. But like I thought I had like a tell on him. Whatever. I thought I had a tell on him. And he raised off of like, I don't know, maybe 25 blinds. And I had like 22 or something like that. And it got back to me. And I had King 4 of hearts. And I was just like, I got to go with my read here. I'm just going to, I just rip it in. And he snap calls me. I was like, yeah, all right. That was a good run. That's fun. You know, reads aren't always right or whatever. And he chose over two jacks. And like, I'd never been so confident in my life. I was like, oh, two jacks. Man, that's not going to be good. I just hope it's like over very quickly for you. Like I was like in my head, like I was just like, I didn't get up. I didn't pack up my book bag, like things I normally do now. Like I sat there and like in my mind, I'm like, okay, so I'm going to have like 50 blinds. This is going to be great. And, like literally in the window, just fucking king right in the window. And like everyone gave me so much shit. Like, you know, like, and rightfully so. They're like, well, what do you think he's raising with? Like that's, he's supposed to. I was like, yeah.
You're like, bro, I thought I had ace king. The four, add a little misleading. Bit to it, we're there.
Well, like, you're like, you can take your pre-flop charge and just shove them up your ass, pretty much. That's basically what you said.
This is what drove me nuts, because like,
people. Well, it was like 2015.
Right, yeah, exactly. Right, for sure.
People told me, they're like, well, you should only be jamming like queens and like, you know, ace king in there. And I was like, okay. Then his call with jacks is shit this. Maybe you should make fun of him.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, back then there wasn't like really, it was a different world. Everything was like covered strictly through Poker News, and there was only one major event going on at a time. So like, you know, as he was running deep, especially like, I think our generation specifically, we were so heavy into the sweats because there were so many like little pockets or collectives where you were always like 1 or 2 degrees removed from somebody running deep in something. And we would sweat things through the media and stuff. So when it hit Twitter, it wasn't like a clip off of Poker Go or, you know, that maybe some people are going to see, maybe some people won't. No, it was like everybody was glued to this WPT final table run. And that hand hit Twitter. And I don't know what the experience was like for you, but as somebody that was like friends with you, it was like, man, I don't know what he was doing. Like, I don't know. I'm not here to justify this move.
Like at those times, like in like, especially Eric Baldwin, like we would talk about suited kings. Like they were like the best, like kind of bluff catcher for like jamming like 3 bets and 4 bets on. Again, this is a different era now, that stuff. But like, it was just like, it wasn't even a question in my mind. I was like, I had a read. I thought I had a tell, and it was just perfect. But I do remember, like, we got back to the house after I bagged, like, whatever it was. So I made the final table.
Two piles.
And, like, I made the final table. And, like, my Twitter feed is just blowing up of, like, mentions and stuff like that. And, like, I just, like, just head first into it. I was like, yeah, King 4 for life. I think Berkey was making 19 eggs like at the time or whatever. Like,
sounds about right.
We're just sitting there like making fun of me / like, you know, like the Twitterverse, like you know, making fun of me at the same time. And like, whatever, you just got to own it. Like everyone makes mistakes in poker. And
who gives a shit?
Sometimes
like,
they work out.
Yeah,
maybe.
Exactly. Like if if it wasn't for luck, I'd lose every one or whatever, something like that.
When did you get the cash?
Me? I actually started out kind of in cash when I was living back in Virginia, when I was playing online a little bit. Obviously, I was losing at the low stakes, and I had to move up where they respected my raises.
Smart. It's a good decision. It's a lesson for all of you out there.
Yeah, and I found a couple of local home games that played 1-2 no limit, which, you know, was way above my 10-cent, 25-cent. And yeah, I started playing live home games, and I made a lot more money there because, you know, those people all had jobs, and I was just some young buck that had seen a Card Runners video. I started winning at cash there. And honestly, when I moved to Vegas, I had already been playing online since, let's see, I got married in 2007. I started playing poker in 2005, like towards the end. I graduated in 2005, and then I started playing poker. And
high school, by the way, not college.
High school. I graduated high school. And I'll tell you the exact moment I became a professional poker player. It was January 2006. I won the $3 rebuy online for like $3,800 for my $9 investment, where I was all in every hand, but I won every hand. And I won that tournament, and I quit college. So I was just like, I'm good. I got this. I got this. And I had met my wife actually the summer of 2005. And once I had quit my college career, we got married. I went to college for a full year, and then I won the three rebuy marquee moment in 2007, January. Got engaged, got married. So I did a semester and a half. I won a package online after we got married in 2008. January of 2008, I won a package to San Remo. I met Jason Mercier when I was there at San Remo. Day two, I swapped 2% with him. And I had like, we had just met, and he was like, oh, I got a lot out. He had like 10% out. And right. He was like, Trace Hole 21, you know, if you guys have never heard of Jason Mercier, you know,
legend.
You're too young to be watching this podcast. But but no, he has an incredible, actually recently on Twitter, somebody posted, I think it was PokerOrg. It was you guys, Conrad, posting something about Jason Mercier, like crushing somebody with 9-5 off. And they were bluffing in, it was Jason in the big
in San Remo.
Yeah, it was final table. And he had to make a huge call for a lot of chips. And I posted something about like me being in the background, like, I'm there, I'm watching him. This is me. I've got 2%. I got a little I cashed for 20K against actually the guy that he busted in this hand with the 9-5 off. I had lost a huge hand against him where it was a flip. So we went there, I met him, I doubled my cash, and then I was like, it was May of 08, and I said to my wife, I said, hey, I had asked her like on our honeymoon, like, would you ever want to move to Vegas? And she was like, fuck no. Oh, here it is. Here's the hand. You guys are good.
Papa's on it.
Here, wait, look in the background. I'll be here soon. Hold on.
Man, this guy's a fucking tell box. I would have called his ass too. Standing up, sipping water.
So classy.
Hold on, here we go.
I just want to see art in the background.
I know.
Oh my
that
god,
guy,
yeah,
that guy.
I call.
Like, call. Come on.
Oh my gosh, call. There's no water in that bottle. What are you doing? That's like 19th time you try to chug it.
He's drinking the air. Hold on. I'm about to appear as if from nowhere.
You actually know this?
Yeah, I've seen this on YouTube. Oh, and he's fist pumping, and
where are you? I think you've made.
I could be anywhere. No, I'm back there.
I could be anywhere.
There he is. Yeah. There he is. That's me.
Were you rocking a mustache?
There you go. There's Bobby too. Look, there's me. Yeah, top right.
Wow, you were skinny.
Yeah, I was skinny.
He looks like white trash there.
Buddy, I had an Aeropostale shirt on. I was not white trash. I could at least afford. He was
playing amongst the locals, you know?
I had spent my time French at Hollister attire. And Aeropostale. Anyway, that's how I end up in Vegas. I doubled my cash there.
So you got rich. Jason got stabbed. We moved on with life.
Oh, yeah. He did get stabbed. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah.
Story for another time.
Yeah. It's a story for now. No, I actually didn't know that story until like years later.
Oh, yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, he got stabbed, viewers. Look it up. Jason Mercier stabbed in Monte Carlo.
Yeah, it was bad.
Look it up, stabbed.
So when did you play cash? Yeah. You moved to Vegas.
That was literally his initial question. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
You guys both just told me about tournaments. Like, I get
it. I still don't know how to play cash. No. No, I mean, I was playing the whole way up. Tournaments were my main focus online. And then cash was like, when I'm playing live, I was always trying to play cash and like find the best games. When we moved to Vegas, actually, funny story about moving to Vegas. When we moved here, we came, me, my wife, my dad, and my best friend at the time from Virginia. We rented a Penske. We fucking moved out here. It took 3.5 days. We slept in the car every single night, except for the very last night. We slept in like Albuquerque in a hotel. We had to get one. It was like, oh, we better empty the cat's litter box. You know, it's fucking stinking up the SUV. So we moved out here. And then we slept one night. We moved to Vegas sight unseen, by the way. I found a place online and I was like, oh, this seems good. Somebody told me Summerlin was good. We were living at Charleston and Buffalo. It was like not quite Summerlin, if you know what I mean.
Close enough.
It was close enough. But no, we moved there. The air conditioning wasn't turned on. Like I hadn't gone to the water utility place to turn on the water. We slept in the heat on the floor of a terrible, like, I mean, it was a 3-bedroom house, but it was like a cheap ass house and cheap ass place. Still married.
Yeah. For now.
If you don't love me at my worst, you don't deserve me at my best.
That's right. 17 years this year, boys.
Oh, so wow.
So I got that shit on lockdown. That is one thing I succeeded at. But anyway, we we moved here. We go to the Rio because I know that's where the WSOP is. I'm like, all right, let's go to the Rio. Me and my buddy, he was playing poker at the time too. We go to the Rio. We arrive. I'm like, where's poker? They point us to the poker room. We go to the poker room. We sit down. It's 2-5, no limit. I'm like, this room's kind of small for the WSOP, but all right, we're here. Let's play. We play. I'm like, man, this game is fucking great.
Yeah.
Like, I've been playing 1-2, no limit. This is more than double the stakes. And like, they're a lot worse than like where I used to play. We play for like, I don't know, like 5 hours, like a long time at this poker room. I don't even think twice about like, this is where the WSOP is. Like, this is it. The main event is right here in this fucking Rio poker room.
Right.
Where it's like 8 tables,
yeah,
tops, yep, you know? Yeah. Anyway,
tucked away in the quarter.
Go home. Very next day, I realize, oh, there's a whole convention center. Thousands of players playing, yep, these tournaments. And then I eventually figure out the rest of the poker economy eventually. But, you know, that was day one in Vegas. I'm not gonna lie. That was the first experience.
Were you not ever like living in that grind house that Croak put together?
No. So
were you managing it at some point? I feel like you had some involvement.
At some point, shout out to Robert Croak, silly bands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or what's the reverse of a shout out? I don't like you, Robert Croak. If you're watching this, reverse of a shout out to you. No,
he's the founder of Donkey Fish, yes, and then Silly Bands.
He founded Silly Bands and Donkey Fish. Actually, funny story. He had an offer from Clorox to buy out Silly Bands for $100 million, and he turned it down. And
regret that one.
Yeah. So reverse shout out on that as well. Good job, buddy. no, but he was staking some players at some point, and I was I told him I had some experience like with staking, which I had to some degree, and I was
as
helping.
In Justin was staking you.
No, I actually hadn't met Justin yet at this point.
Okay.
But I did help him like manage his stable of like 8 players. And we had some agreement, and it came down to the wire where, like, a couple years in, one of the players was at a final table of the WSOP circuit event, and this is why I don't like him. He fired me on the night on, so it was a 2-day tournament. The guy made the final table, and then the next morning, he was like, "Hey, listen, you're fired. Like, I'm not going to pay you if this guy wins this tournament. Anything that on this tournament is not for you."
I didn't even hear the story.
That's insane.
Wow. Yeah, I had like a small, I mean, it wasn't even a huge piece, but it was like a small piece of like, I mean, basically somebody winning is like the culmination of me making money on this whole thing. Right.
So
I was like, all right, well, I mean, I've been doing all this work with the spreadsheets and whatnot. I mean, at the end of the day, I guess I learned how to use Excel. So thank you. But yeah, no, that's the main reason that I don't like.
There were a couple good players in there. Kevin Easter, Eister.
Yeah.
And Tristan Wade, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tristan Wade was creative, in there. Carter England. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah,
him.
Yeah, of course. I know
he was a good online grinder that moved on to a different path. And there was a lot of guys. Actually, there's a guy who sold a company who's like, part of the reason I don't like Rob. It's like a two-part thing, but like
I imagine we can get to more than two if we continue to pull on this thread.
Yeah. I mean, Dan Steele, you remember him?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
of course.
Dan actually sold a huge company in Vegas. It was like an Instagram company where like influencers can get paired up with like advertisers or something like that. It was like a great idea for a company, but there have been three offers come across my table that have been like, do you want to invest in this company? And those three have had Dan Steele involved, and I've had said no because he was part of the impetus of me like,
yeah,
getting fucked on that.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah, probably sharp.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he did sell one for like a lot of money. I could have done well on one of the three.
Sure. Sure.
But anyway, that's my life story.
So that's how you got into cash then, I feel.
That's how I got into cash. Yeah. So. Actually, one of the first cash game sessions I played in Las Vegas was at the Wynn with Lex Veldhaus. Who?
Oh, yeah. I used to battle Lex in that game.
Shout out to Rozzy over on whatever he's on YouTube.
He was
now
a fucking maniac.
Dude, he's awesome.
People have no idea because he's so good now, but he's like just so disciplined. Like there was a clip recently, actually not even that recent, it might have been like 2 years ago, where he folds jacks at a final table to like a raise, and a call or something like that. And he mucks jacks. He's like, "This is what we've been studying for. Like this exact spot comes up," and they both had pocket sevens. Yeah. And I'm just thinking, like, this fucking guy was the most maniac. Like, I'm a maniac, and he made me look so goddamn tame. Like playing that game with him was a fucking roller coaster ride. I can't imagine, like, the way I talk about Oaken now with the amount of thousands of big blinds that go in with like one pair versus one pair type of stuff. It was worse against Lex. Like somehow we're 10K deep and 5-10 at the win, and it's just like a clicking war of who can get their nothing through to the other person who has absolutely no desire in folding.
Dude, that was the time where I had first seen $20 chips, and they were like, Vegas is weird because I had played in Atlantic City where
East Coast doesn't really do this.
They play 10-25. They play two red chips and a green chip, which makes sense to like normal humans. And I sat down and everybody had like a lot of chips, like just a lot of chips. And this was like back in the old Wynn poker room where it was like, felt like a club, you know, it was very like secluded. Yeah. There might've been like 20 tables in there, something like that. And I had gone there because I saw 5-10 on the list. I'm like, all right, 5-10, I could play that. So I go and I play, and I show up, and it's like, there's like 18 red chips on the whole table. It's 5, 10, 20, 40. It's like the guys are playing. I don't know. There's something about $20 chips that make the game play bigger. You know, you put in the $5 chip, someone puts in two $5 chips, and then it's like gray chip, two gray chips. Because it was, I think Wynn has like $20 gray chips, which now the Wynn doesn't even play 10-20. They play 10-20, 40, and they play with fucking $10 chips. It's really weird, actually.
That's really stupid.
But anyway, more chips in play, and that's where I met Lex, and that's where I also met Rec Rule. Do you remember him? Dan Schreiber? Do you know who that is?
Yeah.
You know
the name? Yeah, I can't put the face to the name, but I know
the
name.
He won a bracelet. He won like the heads up.
Yes, yes, yes. I know 10K. Exactly. Who
he is. Okay, he was a StarCraft guy too. Like okay. I had gone on liquidpoker.net, which was a StarCraft forum, an offshoot from Team Liquid.
Jake Harbour was big over there, I think.
Yeah, which is funny. I know a lot of these guys. Joe Ingram.
Yep.
He was on there, but they, I don't know. It's just weird. Like, I never found 2+2. I just happened to find one poker forum, which was liquidpoker.net, which was an offshoot of Team Liquid.
Right.
And like all of the like best players, not all of them, but like a lot of the really good players, like Clay Maguire, Mesmerize Please was a StarCraft type of guy. Joe Ingram was from StarCraft. Johnny Cosmo was from StarCraft. Like a lot of these guys ended up like making it in poker, but they just happened to be on this offshoot forum that I happened to find, like when I'm looking like, how do I get good at poker.com?
You know? Right. You know?
Like, I fell into the right like hemisphere of the internet for poker. Cause I think honestly, if I had fallen into like 2+2 and like the normal kind of run out of poker online, I may have made it to where I am now, but like that hemisphere of like giant brained humans helped me get a lot better than I would have otherwise.
It's funny you say that, because I never really contextualize this or really talk about it much, but I kind of feel, I don't know if I feel similar in that I would be where I'm at or wouldn't be where I'm at or would be more or less successful had I gone the 2+2 route, but I was just a lurker on 2+2. I never posted. And really, I just like tried to keep up with whatever was going on. But like Donkeyfish felt like this like insulated little place where you could be a big fish in a small pond kind of thing. And it allowed the ability to really be kind of like on the forefront of discovery, right? So like you were able to like have your ideas stress tested by an audience, but it was also an audience that kind of held you in reasonably high regard. So you didn't really get shot down to the point where you were never going to throw another idea out. And I think that like for me specifically, somebody who's like incredibly contrarian and just always going against the grain, that was a really helpful like sandbox, because I used to like write articles and like just basically just dump my thoughts onto paper, and I was able to do so without feeling like any like level of shame or embarrassment around it. It's like, okay, well, if it gets criticized, I don't care because it's a dozen people and I know who most of them are, kind of thing. Yeah. I wonder if it had gone the other way, where you're almost in this peer review type of place, but it's like just strictly negative peer review. Like 2+2 has always been a cesspool. Yeah. You know what I mean? Nobody's there like looking to really pat you on the back for any idea, especially if you're contrarian.
Building anyone up.
Right. You know, the proper voices get elevated, but it's also they're playing to the crowd in a big way. Like they're not exactly throwing their against the grain ideas out there and challenging one another in a very specific way. But like in that form, the main guys who were playing a ton, like you, myself, I guess Alex, even though he was only 18 at the time, comes to mind. Like we were at odds all the time, and we were able to like kind of challenge each other in a very specific way where there wasn't going to be any fallout. You know, you're not going to have like what you see on Twitter these days, where if anybody pushes back against some sort of idea, there's just camps immediately. And it's like, which side do you fall? You know, it seems just very detrimental to growth.
Yeah, for sure. I like seeing ideas flourish and like not, you're not getting punished for like, I mean, you're not getting punished by too many people by what dumb ideas you have. It's like, I have an audience of 8, and if 3 of them say something negative about me, that's okay. If the other 5 remain silent.
You can also like take more from it whenever it's that small of a control group, right? Like you can say like, oh, I respect this guy's opinion. He has something negative to say. I can kind of think about it a little bit deeper. All right, let's fast forward a bit.
All right.
And get into when you guys first started playing like high stakes, specifically like private high stakes. So this is what I wanted the bulk of the conversation to be about, but we can still talk a fair amount about it. So we have different, I think we have different entry points, and I think you guys can speak from a very different place. So for me personally, my first glimmer of high stakes was in 2010. There was this man named Zach, and he was ultimately the guy that got Garrett very wealthy. He was a real estate guy, like trust fund baby type of thing. And he came into town, I think it was 2010, it might have been 2011, but either way, I was wealthy at the time and could play. Wealthy by, you know, 29-year-old standards.
Yep.
I had like a half a million. So he came into town, and I guess he like wandered into the wind one night off of the blackjack table and started a 25-50, which, you know, talking about back in the Lex days and stuff like that, that game never ran. It was always like 10-20 cap, or not capped, but like that was the biggest game that would run. So he forced them to play 25-50, and it was like Jackie, Gina, her boyfriend at the time, I can't remember Doug. His name. No, before Doug.
Oh, sorry.
Pre-Doug. Sorry, Doug.
Doug might have been like 12 at the time. he's young.
Yeah, he is.
It was like the three of them, a bunch of other regs whose names escape me now because they haven't been playing.
Bari
was a part of it.
Bari,
yeah. I love Bari. Yeah.
You know, funny story about Bari is I introduced myself to him, German guy named Bari, came to America because he was an au pair, believe it or not. Mm. Didn't know my name for 6 months that I knew him. He called me sweaty because I used to sweat his hands and he would sweat my hands.
That's not the only reason.
And he would call me sweaty. And then it had gotten to the point where he couldn't continue to like. He couldn't ask me for my name.
Hey, buddy.
Like,
hey, he champ. Be like, right. What's up, Tiger?
He could be like, I've been calling you sweaty, and actually, I don't know your name, Art. Like, I need to know. Anyway, right. Carry on.
So, yeah, anyway, that game formed. And for the better part of, like, 4 or 5 months or so, they would just rotate. It would run 2 or 3 days a week, and they would go between there and Aria. Maybe occasionally Venetian, I don't really recall, but they would make their rounds and they would just list everywhere that they went. So the game would only run if all 9 of them showed up at once. And they would basically just, you know, play against Zach, who was losing like $250,000 in the game at the time, just over and over and over again. And I remember just being like on the outside looking in, so fucking mad, just so frustrated, where it's just like, you know, I don't like, I'll reg battle. I don't even care. Like, I don't know what your guys' deal is. I don't know if you're chopping action or whatever, but like, I don't care. I'll be on Team Zach. Like, it could be all of you versus the two of us for all I give a shit. I just think you all suck and he's worse. So, like, let me in kind of thing. And I never got in. And I remember how aggravated I was at that.
Yeah.
Fast forward a few years, I get the most gold seat in the world and get the invite into the JRB game, the 3-6-12 at Aria. And I have a long stay there for like 7 years. And I know that you guys. I don't want to speak for you guys. You guys can kind of tell me your experience, but I know having talked to like Osmus and a lot of the guys that were in your player pool at the time, that had to be just like, you had to be dying inside. It's just like a once in a lifetime seat.
Yeah. At the time, sorry.
No, go for it. Yeah.
I was just going to say at the time, like that was the time where everybody was kind of, like you said, reg battling, like it was fine. You play and then the game would get good or it wouldn't get good, or you showed up really early and you got into the good game. And we were playing at Bellagio a lot at the time, right? This is what year did you say? It was like,
it's been like 2013.
Yeah, that's about right.
Okay, yeah. So
because I just moved out of that game too. So it was previous to you guys, it was like me, Ben Lamb, Chance. We were the daily 1020 regs. And then a bunch of people whose names I don't remember, obviously.
Yeah, right. They're gone.
They didn't make it.
Yeah. No, I mean, that time was like really, really good to be in the early game, but then it would fill in and then whatever, it would get bad and then people would leave. But the time that you were that the private game started to like kind of form.
Yeah.
Like that was the time that it was a little bit later that like the Aria, the Keating game and all those games started to start.
But even prior, like during the JRB games, like Wayne Boyce left your game, you guys lost Carrie. I'm trying to think. There was a bunch. Like Bob Bright would often frequent a lot of those games. He then just became a mainstay at the Aria.
Yeah, honestly, for me personally, there was a time in there where I was playing 1020 and the game was great, and then it got kind of shitty, and I started playing 510. But you were still playing the bigger games, so you would have a better insight here.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little more animosity, honestly, from me. Like it was. You know, we would build these games, and like you said, like, you know, the carries, even like Biffer was considered a fish back then or whatever. Yeah. Like, and like the private game, and like there was only like one or two back then, like it would just kind of pluck.
Yeah.
And like rightfully so, like don't get me wrong. And like it was just one of those things, like, okay, well, what's legal in Vegas and what's not? And like everyone I would talk to, like as far as the floors would go, they're like, well, private games aren't legal here. Like, you know, you can show up and like, you know, start a list. So like I do remember probably not my best moments, but like I know that I sat in on JRB's games multiple times, put myself on the list, and like they clearly had a fake list, and I was trying to expose this.
Yeah.
And which, and again, like I've clearly taken a different stance since, so like I know I'm a bit of a hypocrite. But like I would sit in there and just sit there and wait, but like all he would do was just like put like a stack of chips, yep, in every seat.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And like if I ever happened to like get lucky enough to like, you know, my name was gonna be called, that like JRB and like we're friends now, like he would just be like, oh, let's just call the game, guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And like and again, like it was so frustrating. And like, you know, me and Sean McCormick like butted heads a lot over this stuff too, because like there was no like hard lines. It was all gray area. And like when you work very hard to like start games and build games and cultivate friendships and just see like the best of the recreational players just get taken away from you like time after time after time, it got very frustrating. And it's not like I was like struggling super hard, but like I didn't think it was fair. And like especially, and again, I consider myself a very verbose, like, you know, engaging person. So I knew I wasn't one of the robots that like, you know, would do certain things that were bad for the game. So I'm like, that's fine. Like, just invite me to the game. Like, I'll be fine. Like, you know, like I'll win money, but like, and like I would talk to the people running the games that was like, no, you're too good. And I wasn't, by the way. Like, I mean, like so like every time I would get like, after the first couple, like there was subsects of like people trying to create their own game. Like, I won't name names or whatever, but like they would try to do their own thing, but on a very, very smaller version. So I tried to audition like for the best of my ability, to the point where I lost a lot of money just being like this, you know, like I'm
probably one of the biggest mistakes that anybody can make.
And I agree,
getting into the private game scene too. It's like, but nobody's like keeping your P&L unless you're just winning all the money.
Exactly. All they care about is results. So like I could play like a maniac, and if I won like $10,000 at the end of the day, they'd be like, oh, fucking pros.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or I could play like a fucking nit and like lose $10,000. Like, oh, fucking pros.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it doesn't matter. But like in my head, so like every time I got invited to one, because I worked really hard to get invited, and I got invited to almost every one through the course of, you know, 8 years. Like, you know, I started settling down. It's like, my personality was enough. And like, you know,
oh, you settled down. Teach me.
I mean, settle down for me. Like it was a weird transition.
I went the other way. I was just like, okay, well, it seems like the only thing that's keeping me here is this action. I better learn how to win doing it.
Right. And like this is stuff I'm still, or I think both of us are still kind of struggling with. It's like, because we run a game, like we want it to be the greatest experience of all time, because we want repeat customers. We want everyone to have fun. And like sometimes we give up, I mean, giving up equity is putting it loosely, I'd
sure
say.
Sure.
But in the interim, though, it was very much like a weird transition where like there was only one or two, and then it like went from one or two to like 10 private games, even though
there was that
scale.
Big change. I guess this must have happened like just before COVID, maybe like 2019.
That's right.
When they publicly came out and said like casinos are free to rent their poker tables to whatever private group wants to do it, they just have to pay an excess fee.
That's right.
And once that happened, you're right, like the doors kind of came off. And honestly, like, I'd be curious to your opinion, because mine is that I don't think we're worse off from that that having happened. And I'm viewing it not through the locals' perspective, so I very well could be getting this wrong in that regard, but I'm viewing it from the out-of-towners' perspective. They want to fly into Vegas and they want to know that there's going to be a 100-200 game running. They want to play stakes they've never played. They want to see amounts of money they've never seen, right? So if you're flying in from middle of nowhere Wisconsin and you're used to playing a 5-10 local game,
Wisconsin,
but you have money, you know what I mean? And you just like walk into Aria or Bellagio or the Wynn, these three major properties that have these big high stake rooms set aside, you want to be able to see action there. And you want to just be able to walk up and say, I got $10,000 and I'd like to sit with you guys. You know what I mean? So I think from that perspective, it's been really beneficial. Now to the local reg, maybe they're kind of in the same spot that we were in coming up through our careers.
And it's a very valid point, and I agree with you like on a whole. But like there were a handful of, including Art and like a bunch of other people, that were very personable and like all like usually had seats open. So like to us, it wasn't an issue. It was just like, if you want to come down and sit down and play with $10,000, like there's going to be a seat open. So it was fine. So like it was tough when like you saw, generally speaking, worse pros like stealing.
Yes, of course.
Just so they could do it. It was a tough swallow.
Yeah.
I do think it's a positive. Like since then, it's very clear to me now. It's like we're basically filtering through the people that nobody wants to play with. Because like these recreational players, they can go play craps, blackjack, sapphire. They can go spend their money wherever they want to, and they should be able to choose like wherever they want to play, and like it should be up to the establishment to like present the best product, just pure like, you know, capitalism. And just like it's like, yeah, you want to play with us, this is what you get. And like, yes, a lot of the local pros and or the up-and-comers, even like it does fuck them. It does, like
I would almost make an argument that it fucks them less, because it was you know, again, I'm only speaking from the experience of what it used to be. The poaching was rampant, and the gatekeeping was, in my opinion, so much of a higher bar than it is now. Like, the fact that I played in Ivy's room consistently for 8 years is insane.
It really is.
It
shocks me to this day.
It's just, like, next level insanity. And, I mean, you know, it probably speaks a little bit to how much action I was willing to give. Even that aside, like, plenty of guys came and went that tried to be the action drivers, right, and either they couldn't afford to do it, or you know, they just weren't personable enough to stay. Point is that being like a one of one that was able to kind of crack that code made me also realize that like nobody else has a shot, right? Like you have to offer a lot. Like, not only do you have to be somebody who's moving money around the table, you have to be a facilitator of action in some sort of capacity, because that's what the recreationals want. They don't want to sit there and blind off and play small pots and everything else. But then on top of it, you have to be able to offer credit. You have to be able to take a bunch of risk in that regard. You have to be very accommodating to the host. You have to be able to get up whenever you're buried more money than you could ever imagine even possessing in your hands. So you have to do all of these things. And on top of that, you're also kind of like pressured to like subtly poach. It's like, well, your seat would be a lot more secure if you buddied up with another recreational that you could bring in here time and time. And, you know, look, that sort of like exchange in currency is still, it's still a thing. But the issue is that now that there are so many people attempting to run the private games in some sort of capacity, the stakes have lessened. And the poaching, I think, is very much more under control. Floors are a lot more aware of it. People get banned a lot faster. And then on top of it, it's like you don't necessarily have to have as much of an exchange, because it's just clear that for all of these games to exist, there have to be regulars. So every game is built by a core of six regs. And those six regs don't necessarily need to contribute in any other way other than being able to finance the game, being able to drive a little bit of action, being good, like, accommodating host to the recreationals that they're playing. And so it does kind of go back to the 10-20 days when we were just playing public. The difference is we're paying higher rake and we get to say who does and doesn't sit, which I don't like the idea of that. Like, I'm uncomfortable with it, but I've benefited so much from it that it would be insane for me to say that it's it hasn't been a good thing for me. You know what I mean? So I truly don't know. I'm very on the fence of whether I think it's good or bad. My instincts say that it has to be good, though, because of strictly protecting the ecosystem of the recreational money. The guys like that are willing to battle public, that are so refined and tight and good and unwilling to sacrifice even a shred of EV at any given stage, just makes the game unplayable. Like, if I were a guy who had a job and just wanted to fuck around a little bit, I would never sit that win 10-20.
Right.
I just wouldn't. Like, yeah.
I mean, a mutual friend, or I believe he's a friend of ours or whatever, I won't name his name, but like, he would only chop pots. Like, he would only run it twice if he were
out of position.
Out of position.
Because he got the extra chip.
Because he, like, yeah. And yeah. We're playing 10-20, so it's literally a $10 thing, but like, yeah. that's the way his mind works.
Right.
And again, like, he's a good dude, but like, he's the kind of guy that does not belong in like
the private sphere.
I mean, not
in any game.
In any game. I was trying to sugarcoat it.
This is like belongs in tournaments.
Yeah. Right.
Like, exactly. That's why tournaments are so beautiful, because they can be the purest form, because you don't have to EV chase like that. You don't have to change seats. You don't have to worry about you know, cents on the dollar in this regard, but cash is a very, very, very different ecosystem.
Yeah, and one thing I'll say about, like, we've been playing at Aria for the past, since July, basically, when we started our game there at Table One. One thing that Aria does differently than the other casinos is that it's a little more capitalist, a little more meritocracy than some other casinos. They will let you run a game. The only thing that they don't really want is you pulling from people coming in looking for the biggest game. That's so right. They don't want, if somebody comes into the Aria and they're like, oh, what do you got going on? You know, and they're like, oh, we got a 10-20 going over here. They don't have people saying, oh, there's 10-20 there. Don't you want to play 5100 over at the Table One game? Like, they don't do that. And that's one of the things where, like, if you want to run a private game at Aria specifically, they want you to have your own network. They want you to say, bring your own players in. Bring them in from other casinos. We don't care. Bring them in from anywhere. Don't pull from the poker room that is already thriving. Like, Aria's poker room, and honestly, like, the staff there that's working there, they're like, they're the least stressed of any staff I've ever worked with. They're just like, yeah, okay, well, yeah, we have these games, and then we have our, I mean, obviously we have our podcast, so like we're trying to bring people to Vegas from other places. So we are working hard to like bring our own network in. But like people that are already coming in to play like 5-10 no limit with a 5K cap or whatever they're playing, we're not saying, oh, this guy looks like a whale. Bring him into our game. You know what I mean? Like we are, the way that the Aria has it set up is probably the best way to do private games of like any place that I've worked in. And I mean, obviously, like
it, I mean,
there are only a few places in Vegas, but like the way that it works, a lot of places, they're like, oh, you want to play a big game? Why don't you play this private game over here? And then all of a sudden,
I think that's the way it's been since like Donathan. Do you guys remember the show Tilt on ESPN?
Yeah.
Do you remember the way that like the I don't think he was the lead character, but the cop that was like trying to take down do you remember how he got ushered into the big game, and then they called the main character the big pro or whatever his name was, and he came down with like four of his buddies and they chopped him up, and then, you know, he like lost set over set or something like that and threw up in the bathroom. Like, I think that that's just always been the culture of how high stakes has been ran in Vegas, and we don't talk about it because, you know, we don't have the people who were around in that time frame available to us. Like, you know, RIP Doyle, he's not going to be able to speak on it, but like even the guys like Lee or Freddie that were around back then, they're not going to come onto a pod and like tell you about how the early 2000s they would hustle people in and you know, do all this shit that was kind of, you know, now would be seen as very unethical.
Of course, like we used to go 11 handed. I mean, it was like it's another, like, looking back, I know how silly it was, but like we try to like kind of like find the gray area and just kind of like go up to the edge of it.
Well, they had I don't know if this is still true, but for a while they had a 10th seat for Noir Card.
Of course.
So
but it was very important who it was, because if like a Noir Card was already in your game, then like you could actually like convince them to like stand up for a second, get this guy in who wasn't a Noir Card, and like
Right now, let's make it 10-handed.
Like, 2 seconds later, oh, now we're back to 10-handed. Like,
right.
Like there was a lot of shady stuff, even in like the public games or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, you know, we say shady, but like, this was.
It's common.
It was,
it's just the way things worked.
That's the thing. It's like when I moved to Vegas, everywhere you went, you had a five slipped in your palm of your hand, and like you greased people to get things taken. Now that seems so fucking weird and foreign to me. Like, could you imagine walking up to the valet where you're gonna have to swipe your card in and it's gonna ask you if you want a tip and everything else? And you walk up, you're like, "Hey, my man, could you keep this up top?" And you just slide him a five ball. You're gonna look at it and be like, "No, absolutely not." Buddy,
when I'm on a downswing, I'm telling him like, "Yeah, I got you guys on the app. I got you on the kiosk, but." You know, didn't really tip you this time. No, you're right.
Again, I don't want to call any names, but like when I played at Bellagio for, 15 years, like over, like actually, like, but like, actually Frank, whatever. Like, I love Frank. Frank Mucci was a fucking great one. But like, you know, if you've got on his good side, and he'd look at the list, he'd be like, "Yeah, you're actually first up."
Right.
And if you were on his bad side, he's like, it's going to be a long time, buddy. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and that was the, for people.
He wasn't that sorry.
And like, you didn't even have to tip him. It wasn't even that. It was just like, if he liked you as a person, you fucking just got off the list somehow.
He did enjoy the tips, though.
Yeah, he did.
People don't know, for context, Bellagio was the last to switch over to Bravo. So they just had a pen and paper system.
Right. Yep.
And
do whatever you wanted.
During the summer, there was no money. Show. There was no money better spent than $100 to the floor to get you into the 1020 prior to fucking 8 p.m. Yeah. Because those games were often popping as far as, you know,
popping.
They're popping off.
Are we doing popping?
No G's. No G's.
Hard G's. God, you guys are racist.
Straight in.
With the hard G.
I'm just trying to get on and popping.
With the hard G and everything.
I just want to know if Conrad has a belly button right now.
I haven't seen a belly button in ages, buddy.
Did you guys not hear 90 seconds? He's allotted 90 seconds.
Well, we just used 8 of them. Oh, here comes a couple more.
I can show my belly button for the next 82.
He becomes a... He becomes a Christmas ornament after the intro. It's by design, okay?
All right, my design.
We're working hard over here. All right, so what's next? Summer's coming up. Are you guys grinding? I know you guys have a desire for pain. So what's it look like? How much are you going to be at the Paris/Horseshoe, and how much are you going to be at Aria?
I mean, I'll go first just because I feel like my answer is going to be a little more... convoluted, I suppose, but like, or so not. Basically, like, I'm going to show up every day, and like, my goal is to play table one cash games from whenever we start till whatever,
sure,
dinner time to midnight.
That's adorable.
Can't fucking wait.
That's beautiful.
Actually, what's going to happen?
Can I bet against this?
Yeah, let's really going to happen. Let me tell you what's actually going to happen. Right. At some point during the day, I will be either up or down a certain amount of money to where I'm going to say, "Fuck this shit."
And how many scotches at this point?
That doesn't have
depends if I'm up part. Or down.
The answer is 28,000 way or the other.
And if I'm up or down a certain amount, I'll look up the amount or the buy-in at the World Series. I'm like, that seems like a fun tournament, like a 5K six max. That seems amazing.
Yeah,
it's a fucking $1,000 millionaire maker.
Right,
not a fucking chance. Like, I mean, and then like that'll determine whether I go home or go over to the.
I call bullshit. You will play the $1,000 million maker.
He may.
Yes, he will.
Mm-hmm. It'll I be won't. One.
Yes,
it'll
he
be...
fucking will.
I didn't play it last year.
Oh, yeah, but you must have been, like, in a really good game or not losing.
I'm with Berkey here. He's going to play it. Yeah. He's going to play it.
He might max late reg it, but he's going to fucking play it.
Between the three of us in the room are playing the highest stakes, like, no-limit tournaments.
Yeah.
He's going to play the most of them.
For sure. Not even close.
Okay, yeah.
More than you and I combined. Yeah.
Well, he played more tournaments than me this summer.
I don't know.
Are you jumping in the dailies? Are you jumping in the dailies?
Bitcoin's below 60,000 now, so.
Is it? I haven't checked in a while.
Fire sale.
No, I mean, I'll play similar schedule to last year. What was it, like 20-some tournaments?
Ooh. Ooh, it's going to be solid.
It's
going to
be tight. It's going to be tight.
It'll be tight. I agree with Art.
Eternal race. It's going to be.
Who's the tortoise? Who's the hare?
Even not.
Oh, like, you're obviously the hare. Yeah,
so much hair.
But no, I mean, I agree. Like, I mean, I get addicted to poker and like, It's just a form of gambling or whatever. Like, oh, I'm losing at this. Let's just like transfer like my degeneracy to whatever's next.
Yeah.
Oh, during the summer, like this is like our crack cocaine.
Yeah. Time.
There's always something going. Something's like, late regging. Yeah, something's going. There's a tournament starting at 3 o'clock and.
Jesus, sorry.
Is there an MTT on this mic?
But no, like I mean, it's literally just like you get to a certain point and you just. Whatever card player is great, you just like put on Las Vegas tournaments, and then like just five tournaments pop up, and it's just like 1,000, a 5,000, a 10,000. You're like, okay, all right, let's find out what we're gonna risk right now. Like we just go for it. So like, yeah, you're right. Like I mean, we might compete to like, but like, I'm trying to limit myself to the ones I will actually enjoy.
You have good intentions of playing a lot of cash.
I will play the most tournaments in here probably without even trying.
Deep down, for
it
sure.
Does come in randomly when you're not expecting it. 100%.
No one fucking asked you, Connor.
I forgot he was here.
most of the people without a belly button.
The truth of the matter is that you still have that whimsical spirit of a young man chasing a bracelet.
Mm-hmm. A young man coming in for a quickie.
Yeah. I mean, I just when I get like in that mindset of like poker is fun and like I love that feeling. It doesn't matter what
winning.
Yeah, I mean, like you're chasing the dragon, basically. Yeah. It's a good feeling because like whatever winning in cash games is fantastic. Don't get me wrong.
There's
like
glory.
Getting deep in a tournament,
right?
It is the fucking best
really,
feeling ever.
There's really nothing like it. There's really nothing like it.
We don't really care.
Deep is so awesome.
Berkey's so fucking dead inside.
We're crackheads when it comes down to this. No, it's just a great feeling.
Listen, Berkey's so dead inside that like that will never ever like spark it. Like you can't reignite that fire that you just described. I don't know why. We can find it, Burke. One of these days we're going to find it.
But he's
it's in there somewhere.
He's an athlete. He's a competitor. Like, I know it's in there.
It's in there.
But he sees it in
going to take. Something's going to happen. It's going to, like, it's going to be some rare like, tournament.
What it is, I have been, my eyes have been opened mm-hmm. to how meaningless winning is. That's the problem. That's the problem. Like winning a bracelet. No, not winning in general. Like obviously making money in this game is very important. But like winning a tournament is so unimportant where it used to mean everything. Right? Like when you're in your 20s, early 30s, like this is going to be the difference between you being a red pro or not on Full Tilt. This is going to be the difference between people knowing your name and all this stuff. Right. Now it's just like, well, my resume is built, man. Like
it's not about the resume though. It's about confidence and like...
He's got that too.
That's the thing. I know what it takes to win a tournament now. It's mostly flipping fucking coins.
Yeah. Well, like, relax. Guys, you didn't hear that. Berkey gets his jollies off of limping, open limping in mid position.
come check his MTT course coming May 23rd to the 27th. It's mainly about flipping coins, I hear.
God, this guy.
A great plug.
It'll be $1,500 to buy into this course, $1,500 to flip coins in this tournament.
Obviously, I'm exaggerating, but the point I'm trying to say is that it's not that you can't work hard to become a higher ROI player in MTTs. It's just that the times that you get to win are mostly chosen for you. And that doesn't sit well with me. Like, it's something I struggle with cash even. Like, when I upswing, I spend all of my time wondering, like, am I just, like, flopping more top pairs recently?
Yeah.
You know, am I just like, the guy double straddling and it worked out?
The people that flop sets are going to win.
Did I put the 800 the on turn... and now I'm rich? That's
what happened. Right. So it's like I struggle to not be able to quantify my edge, whether there's one there or not, right? So like maybe in MTTs there isn't even one, but if I was like elite, the best of the best, the creme de la creme when it comes to MTTs, and I go enter the fucking 3K, 3,000 entry event at the Win or the World Series or whatever, it's like I'm doing so knowing that I'm not going to get much money back in return.
Man.
I know.
Like when there's 12 people left in the tournament.
Way different.
Like I'm just 40 people left in a tournament. Yeah. Someone opens, you look down at whatever, fucking ace jack offsuit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that brings a little extra nerve as opposed to, like, you play the highest stakes in town.
The problem is,
and you look down at ace jack, you're like, fucking ace jack, whatever, I call or three bet or whatever. Yeah. Like, you barely feel a emotion.
Yeah. Justin, the problem is, you can't sign up for that moment unless you're Justin Bonomo. Then you can buy someone's account and play at that point. but you can't just sign up for 12 left, you know?
That's to defend Bonomo, that is not what he did. He had multiple of himself in the same.
Oh,
that's what Bryn Kenny did.
Oh.
Okay. Let's keep it straight.
Wait, what?
And,
really?
And much more recently, by the way.
Wait, what? I thought Bonomo, Sorrel Mizzi, and all those guys were buying accounts deep.
Sorrel was buying accounts, and Bryn was always an account buyer from like way back in the day.
Bonomo
until recently.
Didn't do that. He just had fake accounts of
everything
his dog
that
playing,
I understand about the Bonomo thing was he was just multi-accounting with like you know, his parents, sister, brother's accounts.
Dog? All Pip? In the same. Pip's in the Sunday in Million? Can we zoom in on Pip? Can we get a shout out to Pip?
No, camera on Pip.
LaManna's got Pip's camera, unfortunately.
Oh, Pip Cam. I know. It's like you got to see my face nonetheless. Instead of Pip's. Like, okay,
that's all I care about.
I just don't want to run him over. I mean, he gets enough shit. Let's at least call his misfortunes appropriately, I guess.
Anyway, Pip's going to win a bracelet this year, I have a feeling.
For sure.
Once that online schedule is announced.
That's for damn sure.
You know, it's funny. I have no problems jumping in the online ones, and I think I'm a way bigger dog there.
Yeah, you are.
Because you're sitting in your like fucking couch.
Like here, the local ones?
Yeah, yeah. Dude, no, I'm not even. I'm playing cash with my phone in front of me.
I don't think you like people or crowds.
Oh, that's...
We're waiting for sure.
So I'll be at Pottawatomie Thursday for a noon meetup. Don't say hi.
No, it's honestly, I think it's the inconvenience. I think it's like, oh, I got to get here. I got to go here. Sure. I might it's have to stand that, in line. At this.
It's more that they eject me when I lose.
They eject, yes. They do eject.
I want to sit there and tilt and continue to fire off
also,
more shots.
Also, going through all the inconvenience just to get ejected two hands later
right.
is dejecting.
You but, just love being rejected. Well, no, I mean, that's what it is.
But if you start at cash, then like the emotions are already really high or really low. So like when you get to the tournament part and like inevitably you get fucked or like whatever, like,
yeah.
Like they usually stay pretty close to that or whatever. Like if I'm down 30,000 in cash games and I go to play like a millionaire maker, which I will. Obviously.
Right. Yeah.
Whatever. And I get it in good and I lose. I'm really not that mad. Like it's just whatever. Now I'm down 31,000. Fucking fantastic.
It's not about the dollar. No, it's about the time. Yeah. We're getting old, Justin.
Well, like, yeah, but
you can't just lose 3 hours of my day to lose fucking jacks versus nines.
Like the thing is, like,
I have to at least won ace nine versus ace king at some point in between.
But yeah, like I'm sure you're gonna go to the gym or like I don't know, do something
better myself.
But like you know, what am I gonna do? Like
drink whiskey and do what?
Exactly. I mean, I'm not saying I won't have a good time, but like it's not gonna be productive.
Wait, so are you saying you're back on the tour? Are we gonna be traveling again around the country? I'm in for this.
I mean, I did go to Florida and I actually had a blast. I haven't been in probably 6 years.
Did you sext with your wife again?
No, she was there.
Oh,
I sexted on my wife.
Oh, you. Okay. That was peak fucking travel moment.
We were singing somewhere. We're out there from like Five O Goes West.
wait, during?
Out there. And like Berkey and Dan O'Brien come in and he's like, what the fuck are you doing?
he's like shirtless rubbing his nipples.
Like we're looking at the same moon right now. Calm down.
Shout out Dan O'Brien.
Uncle Dan. We shout out him all the time. Yep. He's never watched an episode.
Oh, I missed
double
Dan.
Shout out then. What's he up to now? Is he still there he is.
He's always lurking.
He just got engaged actually.
Oh, yeah.
Can't believe it.
Is it gonna work out? I don't
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I
what's his name?
They're great together. All right, any final thoughts? I gotta pee.
That's about your peeing.
Is it gonna be a 3-point shot or are you gonna go hard close?
Do you hit the water or the side rim?
We've been here for 100 minutes. I thought that, you know, Justin's like, I'm only on my second beer. I thought we were going to go for a while.
Is the water in the urinal both cold and deep?
Can't confirm.
Oh, yeah. Didn't you stab a girl and made her bleed?
Rubber leg. That's a fucking enough here.
I got some final thoughts on that.
Sorry, I know Berkey too well, I guess.
Oh, all right, before we start talking about anal fizzers, we're going to get out of here. Thank you guys so much for joining us. Appreciate all the horror and war stories that you brought up. We're going to have to do this again. And, you know, hey, if you're running out of episodes, maybe have Tortoise or Conrad on one of these days. They'll
would love
be
that.
Yeah. Honestly, fun.
I know that was an option. That's great.
We live 2 blocks away.
Do you really?
That's literally my here. House. Oh, nice. I could have walked here. I might walk home after one more beer.
Conrad can tell you all about his belly button.
Yeah, it's gonna be a great time.
Jamie Kerstetter wants us to end on this one. She said, will there ever be a special peasant game at table one someday?
Yes.
I.e. steaks she can afford.
Invite me to that one.
Yeah, yeah. No, if you want to put her in, she's in. All right. Peasant steaks for her, Real steaks for burgers.
We can do the old Gabe Thaler. It's like 5-5, but $100 like big blind Annie.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. It's a good way of tricking them.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Tricking them. You want to come play 5-10? Too bad. It's 50-100.
All right, that's gonna do it for us. I'm headed out of town. We have one final show this week tomorrow with Matt Hunt. We're gonna do Strat Chat. Then I'm gonna take off, and we're gonna be off on Thursday and Friday this week. So thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thank you.
Wait a minute. Thursday and Friday?
Yeah.
You might as well watch two old Table One pods.
I think so.
Those 2 days when you're craving this show.
Exactly.
We've got 20X episodes. Roughly.
They're trying to get off the
Art
air.
Is just the Sorry, manager.
I love it. I love it. I love exactly what you're doing.
I'm a promotion type of guy.
Listen, somebody's got to do the plug-in. The hell else are we doing here?
Also, hey, listen, guys out there, if you work anywhere where you think someone might want to play at Table One, get on the DMs on Twitter. You can possibly make up to $2,000 per player that comes and plays on Table One. Right. So
that's
message
enough.
Me directly. These are the official.
You have any crypto referral links you want to like throw out there?
www.bitcoin.com/table1/ Salt for Wire.
Yeah, Bitcoin.com is really popular.
Why are we here?
All right, that's going to do it. Be sure to follow these guys on socials at Table One Vegas. And I think you can find their regular ones from there. We'll talk to you guys soon. See you all tomorrow.
Thanks, Berkey. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.